Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks. Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation.
With Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 8 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater program, 240 in the series. It's December 9th, 2017, and to my right is the vivacious Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa?
Hey, Carl.
How's it going?
Great. It's been a big night already.
I know, and look who is in the booth.
We're going what back to it? Our roots.
Gosh,
here.
Is it 2015?
That would be right.
Is that
we
when
have
we started?
Our very first WGN producer, Dan Long.
That's right.
Tonight.
Hi, Dan.
Let's see if I remember how to do this.
We have faith in you.
Well, we could just play music all night if we can't play the classic radio shows. I'm sure our listeners would love that.
Oh, you could
right?
sing for us.
I'll do that.
That'll
I'll just
work
sing,
out well.
Yeah. Well, we have three Christmas classic radio shows for you all the way to 2 o'clock in the morning. We're going to start things off with James Stewart, starring as the Six Shooter, then Jim and Marion Jordan are Fibber McGee and Molly, then Walter Houston stars in the Cavalcade of America, and it's all brought to you by Cats Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cats Pride.
This actor stars in the upcoming film Life in a Year, about a 17-year-old who finds out his girlfriend is dying, so he sets out to give her an entire life in the year she has left.
Okay, sounds
okay.
good.
And the winner,
sounds like a tearjerker.
It sure does. And the winner is going to get a MyPillow.
Yeah?
The most comfortable pillow you'll ever own.
Very
and
nice.
You know that, though.
I could use one of those right now. I'm tired.
I don't think you're going to need a pillow to fall asleep.
I didn't have a nap earlier today.
I can tell.
All right. So the number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor was the star of 2010's The Karate Kid.
I got a good foundation here. You know, like I said, I'm just... might not be as hard to teach me as other people, you know?
All right, who is that actor? 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after these words.
We are back. This is the WGN Radio Theater, and we are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
I got a good foundation here. You know, like I said, I'm just... might not be as hard to teach me as other people, you know?
He sounds so young there. He's a lot older now. Yeah. Hi, Sherry. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
Good. Good to hear from you.
You too.
So who is that actor?
Jaden Smith.
Jaden Smith is exactly right. And Sherry, we are so thrilled you get to get a MyPillow, which is guaranteed the most comfortable pillow you will ever own. You can visit MyPillow.com for more information. And Carl knows all about that because I bought him a MyPillow.
Yeah.
I don't know, last year or something for the
holidays.
I'm going
to go over to Sherry's house and take a nap on her MyPillow.
There you go.
Oh, I don't know. What do you think about that, Sherry? You okay with that?
Sure, no problem.
I heard he snores and
I'm very loud
and other
snore.
Things. And does other things too.
And other things.
Well, congratulations, Sherry. Enjoy the pillow.
The snoring will be the least of it, right?
That's what I'm trying to say.
Merry Christmas, Sherry.
Merry Christmas.
All right. Big winner. And you know what? I want to get some texts from our listeners. And I have a question to ask our listeners, and we'll say what the answers are throughout the night, okay? The big question of the night is, what toy could you not live without? You needed it for Christmas as a kid growing up.
Or a holiday. It doesn't have to be Christmas. It could be Hanukkah or
sure.
holiday or a birthday gift.
Absolutely it could. What toy could you not live without growing up? Give us a text here, 312-981-7200. We'll say your first name and your city. We won't say your last name, but we'll say your first name and city.
We don't even have to have a city, just a
well,
name.
If
but
you,
also,
if you give
Carl
it to
and
us.
I will divulge our
yes,
remembering our special gifts as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, text us in, 312-981-7200. What toy could you not live without growing up? All right, it's time for James Stewart as the Six Shooter. He played Britt Ponsett, who was a frontier drifter. He was an all-around good guy on this Western series. It premiered on NBC Radio in 1953, and Ponset carried a gray steel six-gun with an unmarked rainbow mother-of-pearl handle, and people called them both the six-shooter. Stewart was perfect as the slow-talking maverick who found himself embroiled in other people's problems. Sometimes, Lisa, he had to shoot his way out of those problems. It was a great Western. Came to radio a little too late, though. Only lasted one season. James Stewart was great on this. And you know what? On the Christmas show, December 20th, 1953, their annual show, they did sort of a retelling of A Christmas Carol. Very interesting. And Jimmy Stewart stars in this along with Dick Beals, Howard McNear, Will Wright, and Eleanor Audley. Let's go back to that broadcast date now and hear this episode, part one of The Six Shooter.
James Stewart as The Six Shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother-of-pearl, its handle unmarked. People call them both the six-shooter. James Stewart as the six-shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponset, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still-remembered legends.
Was a nip in the air, not a freezing, biting, angry nip, but a sort of tingle that made the morning stars shimmer and swung them out of their orbits a little closer to the earth. Oh, it was a winter nip, all right, but not a hard winter. Not a winter when the cattle would come down from the high places, poking their noses into the ice-encrusted ground. It was a mild winter nip. Mild enough so that the breath of the boy on the pinto turned only a faint gray as he rode toward the campfire where the man was sitting.
Howdy.
Hello, mister. I see your fire. I thought maybe you wouldn't mind if I gave my pony a chance to warm up.
Sure, sure. Myself home.
Easy, Black. You heading for Thompson's Corners, mister?
That's right.
I just came from there.
Oh, well, you must have been riding all night.
Just about. You see, I'm running away from home.
Oh, that's so. Seems kind of a funny thing you'd pick this time of year to run away. So close to Christmas, I mean.
I hate Christmas.
Oh?
It's just for kids, anyhow.
Well...
I heard Aunt Millie say so. Christmas is for children, that's what she said. Johnny's old enough to do without all that fuss and nonsense. I heard her tell Mr. Franklin that.
Oh, you don't live with your folks, huh, Johnny?
No, sir. They died about 8 months ago.
Oh, I see.
Christmas was all right when I was with them. Of course, I was a lot younger then.
Oh, yes.
It just beats me the way folks take Christmas so serious.
Well, I don't know.
As if getting presents made any difference. As if I really cared about that knife.
Well, is that what you wanted, a pocket knife?
I don't want a knife. I don't want anything. I just wish there wasn't any Christmas, that's all.
Uh-huh. Well, I guess you aren't the first person to feel that way. It seems to me I remember reading a story once about a fellow felt the same way about Christmas you do. Just didn't have any use for it.
What happened to you?
Well, I doubt if I can call it to mind after all this time, but... As I recollect, now mind you, this may not be word for word, but as I recollect, the man that it was about, the one that hated Christmas, that is, well, he was a real skinflint, he was. He just as stingy as they come. His name was, Eben, something like that.
Eben?
Eben, yeah, I'm pretty sure that was it. Well, being so tight-fisted, this fellow Eben, he got to be the richest man in the whole territory.
He owned a ranch?
Oh, sure. Had four of them. Four ranches and store buildings and farms and maybe a bank or two.
He was rich. I bet he had a mighty fine ranch house.
No, he didn't have a ranch house. Evan wasn't the sort to spend money on a ranch house unless there was profit in it. See, he just lived alone in town, had himself a study room at the hotel. Well, anyway, one night while Evan was sitting in his room having supper, Christmas Eve it was, well, on this particular Christmas Eve, his only kin, a nephew, lived in the same town. He stopped by the hotel.
To wish you a Merry Christmas, Uncle, and invite you to our place for dinner tomorrow.
Christmas, fiddlesticks, powder all. I suppose you'd be closing up your livery stable for the occasion.
Why, sure, Uncle Eb.
And just how will the horses know it's Christmas? Answer me that.
Well, if they don't know it, we will. Can I tell Sally to expect you at 3?
You can expect me all you like, but I ain't coming. Not at 3 or any other time. Oh, if you're making so much money, you can afford to be giving parties. Maybe I ought to think about raising the rents on the livery stable.
Well, now, Uncle,
I'll go and get out of here before I lose my temper. All this nonsense about Christmas. Fiddlesticks. Hold it.
Well, after that, Johnny, the nephew didn't stick around there. He got out of Evan's hotel room at a regular gallop. It wasn't very long before Evan had another visitor. He's a young fella, tall, lanky, not very good at speaking. He this plain, ordinary cowpoke. He was the foreman of the S&M ranch.
Oh, well, it took you long enough to get here. Where have you been? Selling off some of my herd without telling me about it?
No, sir. That day you rode by, I was out in the range hunting strays.
And a good thing I decided to check up on you, too. What's that cabin doing over by Holly Creek? And who are those people staying here?
They're my family. I built the shack for them myself.
I'm not going to have a bunch of nesters in my property. Tear it down.
But one of my boys has been sick. I can't afford
to rent
it. That
ain't my concern. It's up to you to keep your family and what you earn. So see that you get rid of that shack tomorrow.
But tomorrow's Christmas.
Oh, well, then you'll have plenty of free time to tear it down. I'll be out the day after to make sure you've done it. Good night.
Wasn't much use in arguing. Foreman knew that. So he put on his hat and shoveled out. Now Evan was alone again. At least he thought he was alone. The clock on the mantle started striking 8, and it's time for him to turn in. So he put on his flannel nightshirt and reached for the kerosene lamp to set it on the stool beside the bed. And right about then, the strangest thing happened.
It went. What in tarnation?
Johnny, old Eben saw a man's face looking right at him from inside that lamp. Eyes and hair and nose and mouth, whiskers, all just as plain as day.
Jake.
It was old Jake, Evan's partner. There wasn't any mistake about it at all. It was Jake right to a T. Well, Evan sure didn't like the idea of having Jake right in the same room with him. You see, Jake had been dead for over 7 years. Not that Evan really believed in ghosts or haunts or anything like that. He told himself he was just imagining all this.
I got to get a hold of myself.
He put out his hand to turn down the wick, but all of a sudden his fingers started trembling. There was Jake again, across the room this time, standing right by the bureau.
No!
And when the lamp slipped out of Evan's hand, the room didn't get dark at all. Jake seemed to be surrounded by a splotch of bright yellow light, and he was wearing the same boots and breeches and leather jacket that he'd had on 7 years ago, the day he died. But as Jake came closer, Evan could see that he was wearing something else. A small leather saddle strapped across his back. And hanging down from it were 2 saddlebags stuffed so full of gold nuggets and mortgage papers and land grants that Jake could hardly drag him across the floor.
You recognize me, Evan?
Oh, sure, Jake. Why, sure, I'd never forget you, but what are you doing here? And why are you wearing that getup?
Always thinking about land and money. Always scheming and conniving. That's why I wear it. And that's why I've come to warn you, Evan. The saddle you're fixing up for yourself is even heavier than mine.
But I don't know what you mean, Jake. I ain't done no wrong. I ain't never done folks no wrong.
Have you ever done them any good? Any good at all?
Oh, why, sure, I've worked hard. I've saved my money. I ain't been a burden on anybody. Why, you should see our ranches, Jake. Oh, the way I've built them up.
I have seen them many times. And I've seen a lot more than that, too. That's my punishment. To spend eternity traveling around, seeing mankind with its trials and tribulations, with its joys and hopes.
Is that so terrible?
Oh, Evan, to watch them and not be able to help them. You'll find out how terrible it is. You'll find out.
Well, there must be some way of avoiding this. You always were my friend. Jake, tell me what to do.
Evan, you've got to find out for yourself.
But how?
Tonight, at 1 o'clock, you'll be haunted by a ghost.
Another ghost?
Pay him heed, Evan. Pay him some heed.
Wait, Jake. Don't leave me without it. Jake?
The yellow light sort of faded away and the ghost was gone. It was just like he hadn't even been there. And then something caught the corner of Evan's eye, a little glimmer on the floor, and he bent over to pick it up.
Here it is. A gold nugget. Now where on earth did he...
And then he remembered. Those saddlebags of Jake's, they'd been filled clear to the brim with gold nuggets.
All right, that's the first portion of The Six Shooter, December 20th, 1953, with A Christmas Carol, starring James Stewart, along with all kinds of great actors on this. Howard McNear is, he was Floyd the Barber. Oh, yes, Andy, yes. He's playing the mean old Scroogey guy on this show. Hope you're enjoying it, and we'll get back to it in just a couple of moments. We've had quite a few texts from people letting us know what toy they could not live without growing up. What are some of them, Lisa?
All right, we have...
I know Slinky.
We had a Slinky. We had a lot of Legos. We have a $6 million man. We have a lot of train sets.
$6 million man. You remember that? Dan, you were too young when...
Yeah, it's a little bit before my time.
Before your time. $6 million man was like a... It was a great television show. Lee Majors.
I remember.
And the $6 million woman.
There was. I don't know. Was there a doll for her, though? I'm not sure if there was a doll for her.
I don't know, but I know we had a $6 million man doll, so
yeah.
I remember that. Dr. Doolittle, that was...
What's that? I mean,
well,
I know
Dr. Doolittle was a movie.
A movie, but
yeah, I don't know.
Maybe it's a VHS. What about a bunch of Lionel trains?
We had a lot of train
sets. I had a Berkshire and a Hudson locomotive when I was a kid.
You did?
Yep.
What's a Hudson? I don't know about a Hudson locomotive.
The Hudson was, I think, a 264 or 462 wheel configuration, and the Berkshire was a 284.
Wow.
So the two drives, the two leading wheels, the four driver wheels, and the four trailing wheels.
This is serious stuff.
He knows his trains.
He had a 4x8-foot board in the basement, you know, and did the trestles, the whole number.
Man.
Do you still have them?
No. I wish I did. They would be probably worth a small fortune
exactly.
Now.
Dave Plyer had one going around the tree.
Sense.
We were just at his holiday extravaganza. We're going to post some pictures.
He has a little of everything, I think.
I'll tell you what. You walk in, and he's got one of these television sets from the late 40s with big kind of a tube.
He had a few television sets.
Oh,
let's put it this way.
Mm-hmm.
It was aerobic exercise when we were growing up as kids to go to have to change the channel on the TV set.
Well,
because you had to get up, you had to go to the TV set.
But you only had five choices.
2, 5, 7, 9, 32.
Well, that was Chicago. In New York, we had 2, 4, 5, 7, 9, 11, and 13.
It's close.
Yeah.
And then later on, they added UHF.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, well, welcome back. Thanks, David Jennings. It is 11:37 here on a Saturday night. So glad to be here playing your favorite classic radio shows, as we do every Saturday and Sunday here from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m., Lisa Wolf and I. And all your favorites, Jack Benny, The Shadow, Boston Blackie, Dragnet, Gunsmoke, Have Gun, Will Travel, Burns and Allen, you name it, we have it right here. And we have a website, WGNRadioTheater.com, and we have a Facebook page. Just go to Facebook and search WGN Radio Theater. We also have pictures of all of the stars that we play. Like, there's a great picture of James Stewart up on our Facebook page. So when you check it out, take a look at him. And then also like us, right, Lisa?
Right. We have a fun fact on there and all sorts of ways. It's the best way to communicate with us. I know right now we're doing a little texting game, and we've got a lot of people who have ideas on what their favorite thing was.
Yeah, what toy couldn't you live without?
Well, Jim said this isn't really a toy, but he got a car in 96 when he was 17, and it's a Plymouth Satellite.
Yeah.
So that was his toy.
Well, you know what?
What?
When you're 16, it's all you can think about is a car.
Well,
right?
That's you. He was 17.
Well, 16, 17, yeah. You need a car. One person texted in, Rock'em Sock'em Robots. Oh, I love that. I had that.
Oh, yeah. Everybody had that. Somebody mentioned a chemistry set.
Yeah.
We had that, too. This is Gilbert's chemistry set with a microscope and a slide
blow
set.
Blow the whole house up with one of those.
Anybody build models, model planes, model cars?
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Sure.
Definitely. We had that. Somebody said a divorced Barbie doll. It came with all of
what?
Divorced Barbie doll. It came with all of Ken's things. Is that a real thing?
That's probably
joke.
Either a joke or that's sometime in the late 70s, early 80s.
That's kind of funny. And somebody mentioned that Dr. Doolittle was a doll with the likeness of Rex Harrison, and you pull the cord.
Yeah. And someone said there was a $6 million woman doll.
Yes, there was a bionic woman.
All right, so text
doll.
Us in. What toy could you not live without as a kid? 312-981-7200. But right now it's time for the conclusion of the six shooter.
Ghost really had been there, huh, mister?
Yeah, I just wasn't any doubt about it, Johnny.
What happened then? Did the other spook turn up? The one Jake said was coming to see Evan?
Oh, sure, Johnny, sure, yeah. He was right on time, too. Evan was lying in bed, wide awake, of course. He hadn't been able to do much sleep. He was too scared. It was kind of peculiar. Evan was half scared the ghost would come and half scared he wouldn't, you see. But before the sound of the clock had died away, there he was. He's sitting in Evan's rocking chair like he'd been there all night long. And this ghost was a young fella, maybe 18, 19, all dooted up the way young bucks like to dress, fancy chaps and checkered shirt and a red bandana tied around his neck.
Howdy, Evan. Reckon you've been expecting me.
Yeah, well, I guess so.
You ready to take a little trip?
Where to?
Back, way back through the years.
Oh, but how can I go with
it? It's real easy. You see, I'm the ghost of Christmas past. Your past, Evan. Let's shove off.
The next thing Evan knew, he and that ghost were standing out on a snow-covered prairie. There was a circle of covered wagons in front of them, and the people from the wagons were gathered together and listening to a tall, white-bearded man.
Behold, I bring you good tidings.
He was reading the Bible.
Great joy, which will beat all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And there shall be a sign unto
and
you. You shall find a baby.
The ghost turned and pointed to a boy sitting away from the others on the tailboard of one of the wagons. Small boy, about 10 years old, with hollowed cheeks and his eyes all red from crying.
Oh no.
It was Evan himself. On a Christmas day, a long, long time ago. Not a very happy Christmas, either. It was only a week since the oxen had stampeded and his ma had been killed when she fell from the wagon. His pa had died with an Apache arrow in his chest.
I don't want to look at him anymore. Can't you show me another Christmas?
Well, it was no sooner said than done. Now Evan and the ghost were in a bunkhouse. And Evan saw himself again. Oh, he's 10 years older than the boy on the prairie, but lying on a blanket staring up in the ceiling. And then his pal, Jay, came running in, all out of breath.
Come on, Eb. Get a clean shirt on. We got us an invite to a party.
Huh?
Yeah, the boss is throwing a big shindig. He says he'll fire us if we don't show up.
Evan couldn't help remembering that party. All the roast beef and the baked ham and square dancing and the pretty girls in their calico. He couldn't help saying out loud to the ghost, "Oh, dear, how I wish I had."
What was that, Evan?
Nothing, Mr. Spirit. Nothing. I was just remembering how I treated my foreman today. That's all.
After that, the ghost took Evan to three or four more of his old Christmases. And none of them were very happy. Especially that Christmas when the young school marm, sitting on the horsehair sofa, had unwrapped the tiny box Evan gave her and then handed it back to him.
It's a lovely ring, Evan, but I can't wear it.
Well, you're not courting somebody else.
No, Evan, but you are. You're courting something else.
Belle.
Land and money, cattle, profits. They mean more to you than I ever would. I'm sorry.
Mr. Ghost, no more of the past. Please, I've seen enough. A man wants to forget.
Sure, Evan, whatever you say.
And before Evan could blink his eyes, he was right back in the hotel room. But once he got there, he blinked real hard because all of a sudden the ghost was becoming a different person. He was getting fatter and his stomach popped out 2 or 3 inches and a few wrinkles creased his cheeks and finally his chaps turned into a shiny blue serge suit with a heavy gold chain dangling across the vest.
What's happened to you? Why are you so different now?
You seem to be getting tired of the past, so I thought we might take a gander at the present, if you've got no objections.
Well, the hotel room just melted away. And Evan was looking at that cabin his foreman had built on Holly Creek. Well, that cabin sure was crowded. Oh, there must have been 5 or 6 children, all helping their mother get the Christmas dinner, all laughing and talking, as busy as summer colds. But when their father came in, he had a long face and a tired mouth, and his wife looked up and wanted to know what was troubling him.
Oh, I was just thinking about old Evan.
That's not a very pleasant thought for Christmas, Bob. By the way, what did he want with you yesterday? Was it about this cabin?
Hmm? Yeah. Oh, no, of course not. Well, let's get on with dinner. Sit down, everybody. Now, where's my Jim, huh? Well, I guess we're just going to have to eat
and something. And Bob, all around the room, he was pretending he didn't see the little fellow in the corner. The boy with an iron brace on his leg and a wooden crutch propped up against the wall. But little Tim, he wasn't going to be ignored.
Here I am!
So Bob picked him up and carried him over to the table.
God bless this food, this house, and us and our friends. Even old Evan. Amen.
The family found that part about Evan a little hard to swallow, but they finally managed, and Tim was the last one to chime in.
God bless us, everyone.
Evan didn't want to watch what was going on in that cabin any longer, but the next place the ghost showed him wasn't much easier on him. There was a big party going on at his nephew's house in back of a livery stable. And one of the ladies was blindfolded, you see, and she was trying to pin the tail onto a donkey. But there was something peculiar about this donkey, about the way it was drawn. It looked more like a person than an animal. Well, Evan recognized who it was supposed to be right off.
You see, folks, I invited Uncle Evan to be with us, but he turned me down flat. So I figured we'd have him here in spirit, if not in the flesh.
Right back in the hotel room again. That's where Evan found himself.
Spirit, you showed me the past and the present. What's left to see?
The future, Evan. The future.
And that's how Evan came to see a Christmas of the future. A cold, brittle Christmas, and There are two men standing on a street corner, and the coat collars turned up so to keep out the snow.
Oh, he's dead, all right. Dead as a doornail. Sure is a Christmas present I never expected. At least whoever handles his property won't be as hard to deal with as he was. Wonder if they'll bother giving him a funeral.
And in a frame house over on the side street in the edge of town, a woman was speaking to her husband.
Funny. To me, he's been dead for years. Well, I haven't even thought of him since I don't know when. And yet, you know, once I was real fond of him. It's funny, isn't it?
Ghost! Who are they talking about? Those men on the street. And that woman I used to know. Who is it that's dead? Tell me.
And the ghost slowly turned and stretched out a long, thin, bony finger. And there, right at the end of that finger, was a tombstone all covered with weeds. Eben could barely make out the name that was carved on it.
Ebenezer Scrooge. No.
What's this? Where am I?
And you know what? He was right in his own bed, in his own nightshirt, and the sun was streaming through the frosted windows. But Eben didn't stay there very long, not for very long. He got into his boots and trousers as fast as he could, and he dashed down the stairs, out into the street. Well, you see, the stores being closed gave Eben quite a problem. Well, he just have to make Fuzzy Wagner open the butcher shop up, that's all. Of course, Fuzzy didn't have much choice, seeing as how the shop was located in one of Eben's buildings. And when Eben told him what he wanted, a turkey and a ham, well...
No. I better make it two hams and send them out to the cabin on the S&M ranch. And they're not to know that I ordered them. You understand, Fuzzy? Here's the money and a little extra for your trouble.
Well, before Fuzzy could get his jaw shut up again, Eben was on his way, and he headed right straight out to his nephew's house. And Eben was the life of the party, too. Well, the way he carried on, laughing and making jokes and telling stories on himself, and he insisted that they use that donkey with his face on it when they played games, you know.
Yes, because that's what I've been all these years, a real four-footed, long-eared donkey.
The next morning, though, that's what Eben enjoyed the most. He was up bright and early and hitched the team to the buckboard and drove out to the S&M, hurrying the horses all the way.
Come on, Bess. Come on, Martha. Step a little lively.
If you could just get out there before his foreman start tearing down that cabin.
Whoa, Martha. Whoa. Yeah. Well, Robert?
Yes, sir?
I see you ain't carried out my orders.
It was Christmas. I just couldn't tell him. I'll do it today.
Oh, this is the last straw. I'm not putting up with your shenanigans any longer, young fella.
But please,
that cabin's coming down and no buts about it. And then... And then we're building a new ranch house in its place. Big enough for you and your whole family.
What?
Oh, yes. I'm also doubling your wages as of last week. Merry Christmas, Bob. Even if I am a day late. No, not a day. More like half a lifetime. But Merry Christmas anyway. And as your son says, God blesses everyone.
Well, that's the way things worked out, Johnny, more or less.
That's a fine story, mister. Real fine. I reckon I know why you told it to me.
How's that?
So's I'd understand about Christmas and how important it is to do for other people instead of just thinking about yourself.
Well, no. I didn't have that in mind, especially. The story just happened to come into my head, that's all.
Well, maybe you advised to give Aunt Nellie something, a present, maybe. Oh, shucks, what could I give her? I don't have no money.
Well, of course, there are lots of things don't cost a penny, not a single red cent, you know.
Huh?
Well, now, you... Let's see. Take that little spruce over there. I'd be real easy to cut that down.
With a little fixing, maybe a few doodads from around the house, I'll bet you can make a Jim Dandy Christmas tree out of that.
I suppose so, but what good's a tree without something to put under it?
Oh, yeah, I see what you mean. Johnny, you don't happen to know Jim Bender, do you? In Thompson's Corner and his three daughters?
He's only got two, mister, Sarah and Emily.
Oh, is that so? I was spending Christmas with them. It looks like I'm carrying an extra present. It's a real pretty little red bonnet with feathers on it.
I couldn't take it, mister.
Oh, no. I wasn't thinking of giving it to you, Johnny. But I was sort of hoping that you'd show me the trail from here on in. Of course, it wouldn't mean you're turning around going back home, but if I was the cause of you changing your plans, I'd feel obligated to pay you back some way, you know.
Well,
it would be only fair. Trouble is, I haven't got much money, so if you wouldn't mind accepting the bonnet instead, you'd be doing me a real favor, Johnny.
There's Aunt Nellie out in the yard. She looks madder than a wet hen.
Well, there is a resemblance. I'll have to admit that.
Where in tarnation have you been, John Carterville? I've been looking high and low for you since dawn.
Well, I just went for a little ride, Aunt Nellie, to get us a Christmas tree, see?
Christmas tree? Fiddlesticks.
This gentleman helped me cut it down. I'll just take it inside. Be right back, mister.
As if we had any use for a Christmas tree. I suppose he's figuring there'll be a whole lot of presents under it.
No, I don't think so. But just between you and me, I got a hunch there'll be at least one present waiting for somebody.
What are you talking about?
Oh, no, it wouldn't be fair for me to speak out before Christmas. You know that.
You don't mean he's got something for me?
No. You mustn't get too curious so early.
But I thought he didn't like me. I thought he just hated having to live here with an old maid. I guess I just don't know nothing about kids. Nothing at all. I don't deserve to get...
Well, I think I'd better get moving along. Say goodbye to Johnny for him, will you? And, I wonder if you'd give this to him.
Mm-hmm.
Here, tell him the little blade on it's kind of dull, but...
A pocket knife?
Yeah.
Now, how did you know?
So long, ma'am.
Oh, God bless you, mister. And Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
That's Jimmy Stewart there, Lisa, with the six shooter going back to December 20th, 1953, as heard on NBC. That's sort of a story of the Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, and a great cast. Dick Beals, we had Howard McNear, Will Wright, Eleanor Audley was the woman he was just talking to there, and Tyler McVeigh. Hope you enjoyed James Stewart as the six shooter. Let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
This is where we play all your favorite classic radio shows, right, Lisa? If you
hey,
like,
Carl.
You know, it's funny because I run into people all the time. In fact, we ran into a very nice lady. Her name was Chris, young girl, probably in her 30s. At Dave's party, and she said she never misses our show, loves classic radio. Her and her sister, they both listen to classic radio all the time. She's been listening to it for years. You don't have to be around back in those days. You don't have to have listened to these originally to enjoy these radio shows. You can be 15, 18, 20, 30, 40, doesn't matter, right?
Right.
You know, my kids... They love these shows. They listen to the shows. I mean, I have them monopolized. They're in the car, and I put the podcast on, and they listen and they laugh. They laugh at Life with Luigi and Fibber McGee and Molly. And
I think it's just a matter of being exposed to them.
Yeah.
I don't know how many kids are exposed to them at this point, but when they are, you know, they can be really special.
Well, this is a big radio station. We're exposing a lot of people to these classic radio shows. And from the texts and that we get in, people love these shows. So we hope we can continue to do this for a very long time. Playing these classic radio shows on this legendary station, WGN. This hour, Fibber McGee and Molly, a Christmas show from 1945. Then in hour three, it's The Cavalcade of America, another great Christmas show, and that stars Walter Houston. And it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
This actor stars in the upcoming film The Sisters Brothers, about a gold prospector who was chased by the infamous duo of assassins, the Sisters Brothers.
Huh?
Hmm?
What?
That's a duo of assassins. They're called the Sisters Brothers.
The Sisters Brothers, okay.
Mm-hmm. That's the name of the film.
What do they win?
They're going to win a Twilight Zone 4 CD set.
All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor played Commodus in Gladiator.
Slave! You will remove your helmet and tell me your name.
All right. Who is that actor? I love this guy. Great actor. 312-981-7200. Give us a call. Win some Twilight Zone CDs. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the WGN Radio Theater. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
Slave! You will remove your helmet and tell me your name.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Great. Glad you made it through the caller. And who is that actor?
It's Joaquin Phoenix.
Joaquin Phoenix is exactly right. I know that didn't make any sense, graduate through the caller. Glad you got through as the caller is what I meant to say. And same thing. You have won a Twilight Zone. It's a 4-CD set. Carl's laughing at me. I'm sorry. It's produced by Carl, and it's hosted by Stacey Keach. And so we hope that you really enjoy the Twilight Zones.
Wow, I'm really looking forward to it. Thank you, guys.
Oh, terrific.
You're welcome, Mark. Merry Christmas, my friend.
Thanks.
We love our listeners. We love giving them fun prizes. And I got to tell you, they're texting in their favorite toy as a kid. What is the toy you could not live without? And somebody texted in Stretch Armstrong.
Oh, that
Remember
was
that?
A good one.
God. And then
Stratego, which was a game that I used to play with my brother
Operation.
All the time.
Operation.
Somebody said a vacuform heated up and you could make signs and
pictures.
Oh,
I remember that.
You do?
Yeah, I remember. And I remember the little thing that you'd cut out. Yeah, Shrinky Dinks.
That I remember.
Cut them out and then you put them in the oven and they'd shrink, but they'd get thicker.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. We've got somebody said a John Nagy Learn to Draw set. I don't know what that is.
I don't know what that is.
And somebody said marbles. They used to play with his dad, which is really, really nice.
Right.
So Major Matt Mason.
I still have my marbles. They're in my head, though.
Yeah, you've lost them a long time ago.
Lost them, yeah.
We've got a Major Matt Mason astronaut.
What was that?
I don't know. We've got a Tiny Tears doll.
Yeah.
I guess it used to
Well,
cry.
We're going to reveal what our favorite toys were as kids in just a little while, probably after Fibber McGee and Molly. But give us a text. Tell us what toy you could not live without. 312-981-7200, but it's time now for one of the best comedy shows of the golden age of radio. Came to radio in 1935. Fibber McGee and Molly was just a favorite all the way to 1959. Jim and Marion Jordan were the stars. They were real-life husband and wife. They lived in the show at 79 Wistful Vista in Wistful Vista, USA. The show was written by Don Quinn, who was the co-creator of the series. And there was all these neighbors that would stop by and ring the bell and come in and talk with Fibber and Molly. So great. Of course, Fibber had a hall closet, very messy hall closet. And the show, for most of its run, was sponsored by Johnson's Wax, with Harlow Wilcox doing the announcing, as heard on NBC. And we have a great Christmas show for you now, from December 18th, 1945, called Painting the Christmas Tree White. Here's Jim and Marion Jordan in part one of Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. Well, The makers of Johnson's Wax products for home and industry present Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn and Phil Leslie, with music by the Kingsmen and Billy Mills Orchestra. What two things are you most anxious to have in your home? Aren't they beauty and cleanliness? Well, think for a moment how easily and inexpensively you can have both beauty and cleanliness just with an occasional application of genuine Johnson's wax to your floors, furniture, and woodwork. A rich, mellow, polished wax surface is a thing of beauty in itself. The wax brings out the grain and beauty of the wood. It adds a soft luster to leather, linoleum, and metal surfaces. And, of course, this tough wax film protects these surfaces against wear, dirt, and moisture. Dust and dirt do not adhere readily to a wax-polished surface. So cleaning is not only easier, but a waxed home is actually cleaner and more sanitary. Johnson's wax is of the very finest quality and long-wearing. The cost is really very little. So why not practice protective housekeeping in your home with genuine Johnson's wax? Dealers everywhere carry it. There are certain people who simply won't admit that nature does anything right. They are the kind who gild cattails, paint "Whose Little Tootsie Are You" on the shells of baby turtles, and clip poodle dogs to look like anemic lions. Here's one of those people now, as we meet Fibber McGee and Molly.
Hey, Fred, how much you charge me to paint this Christmas tree white?
Why do you want it white, McGee?
What do you mean, why do I want it white? You got 100 trees in this lot you've painted white.
Yeah, and I think they're horrible. But some people like them that way.
Never mind the artistic comment, Fred. How much?
$10.
$10? To spray a little white paint on this half-pint tree? Who do you think you are, Rembrandt? Look, looky here. Maybe you didn't understand, Fritz. I want this tree painted white, not gold-plated.
$10.
You're a pirate, and I'll bet you've made $200 already today.
You're a cheapskate, and I've made $340.
You're a robber, and you want to sell a half interest in this joint?
You're a stoop, and I wouldn't sell my own mother a half interest.
You're a low-down no-good.
Oh, the dirty swindler. $10 to spray a little tree white. The rat. Cheating people right and left, making $400 a day. The chiseler. I don't know whether to report him to the OPA or make him a better offer for a half interest. Low-down chiseler.
What's the matter, McGee, this time?
It's that guy Fred Corrigan that runs the Christmas tree lot at 14th and Oak. That dirty pine broker. Wanted to charge me $10 to paint our Christmas tree white.
Well, that does seem a little high, dearie. But think of the work there is to it. Putting all those needles back on after the paint dries?
They don't take the needles off. They just spray the trees. Whish, whish, whish. That's all there is to it.
Well, if wishing will make it so, why don't you do it yourself?
If it's a $10 job, I can't afford to pay myself that much. Besides, I haven't got a paint spray, so... Hey! Haven't we got a paint spray attachment on the vacuum cleaner?
Oh, dear.
Oh, my gosh. I can have that tree painted white before you can say, don't it look awful?
Now, McGee, please, I realize we need the house painted, but not on the inside. Let's leave the tree green.
Oh, you'll love a white one, Snooky. It's the modern thing. Nobody uses green trees anymore. They're outmoded.
You don't say. Well, tell me, Salvador. What color snow are people using this year? Chartreuse?
No kidding, Molly. White Christmas trees are all the rage. Everybody.
They must be. They throw me into one. Now, look, sweetheart. Just put the tree up and trim it. I love a green Christmas tree. Don't you, Alice?
No, not quite, Mrs. McGee.
Look, Molly, I'll put it up to Alice fair and square.
and let her give an opinion. Here's the preposition, kid. If you were going to have a Christmas tree, which would you rather have? A dusty, drab, dirty old green one, or a bright, snappy, glistening white one?
Which, Alice?
Mistletoe.
No. Mistletoe. What an answer.
Well, jeepers, don't you like to hang up a little bouquet of mistletoe, Mr. McGee?
Oh, he's too shy, Alice.
I am not shy. What good is mistletoe? Catch somebody under it, and it's either somebody you can kiss anyway, like your wife, or you get a slap in the chops before you can point up to it. Mistletoe, bah. That's just poison ivy with berries.
Well, we'll put some up, Alice, and you'll see who manages to spend most of his time loitering around beneath it.
Yeah.
But honestly now, dear, do you like a white Christmas tree?
Well, I like them all, Mrs. McGee. I don't care if they're purple. Gertrude always has a white one, though, and she likes them.
Who's Gertrude? We know her.
Oh, she's the boy who always rides past here in the cream-colored Cadillac and honks his horn, sister.
Ah, yes. I see. Well, himself, he used to go with a man who owned a Stutz Bearcat's knees.
Yeah. Yeah, but I gave her up for an old guy with a broken-down Maxwell's daughter. But honestly now, Alice, don't you really prefer a white Christmas tree?
Well, I got awfully tired of them, Mr. McGee. When I was a little girl, my father gave us kids some little tiny paintbrushes and told us to paint a Christmas tree white.
Heavenly days. Wow. It must have taken you children a long time to paint a tree with little brushes. How long did it take you, Alice?
Oh, we never did get it finished. But it kept us off the streets till we were 18 years old. Well, I gotta wrap some presents. See you later.
Right, kid. How all that lovely golden hair can grow out of that solid bone, I'll never
know. Ah, she's awfully sweet, though, McGee. There isn't a mean thought in Alice's head.
No, nor any other kind. Well, this ain't getting my tree sprayed.
Where'd you leave the tree, dearie?
Out in front. I can attach the vacuum cleaner cord from the porch light. Now, let me see if I get the...
Come in. Oh, hello there, Dr. Gamble.
Hello, Molly. How are you today, pantry paunch?
Fine, Jumbo, fine. You out spreading a little Christmas cheer, telling your patients you're going to retire?
Oh. He's not going to retire for years yet, are you, Doctor?
My dear, I will retire on that far distant day when I can write a personal check for $400 and not have the hired help at the Fourth National Bank burst into hysterical laughter.
Why, go on, you old miser. You got that much buried under a loose brick in the fireplace right now. Trouble with you is you got more affection for a dollar than my wife has for a pound of butter. And that's the love match of the year, fatso.
Ah, you have no right to say that, though, McGee. Dr. Gamble does more private charity work than anybody in town.
Certainly. I'm a very noble character. When I walk down the street, flowers spring into bloom.
Oh.
Birds burst into song, and taxicabs honk twice before they try to kill me. Well, I gotta run along now. This is my busy season, you know.
I suppose the children keep you pretty busy around Christmas time, Doctor, huh?
No, it's the so-called grown-ups, my dear.
Huh?
This is the silly season, when 200-pound men start climbing 49-cent stepladders to wire dime store angels to the tops of $3 Christmas trees and wind up in a $500 plastic cast. Pennywise and compound fracture foolish.
Don't you want to stick around and watch me trim our Christmas tree, Doc? I'm painting it white.
Well, you don't have to do that, Skipwit.
Huh?
When I put my gift for you under it, it'll turn white.
Ah, that doggone thing, there it goes again. Clogs up like a sentimental woman at a sad movie.
What seems to be the matter, dearie?
This paint spray goes along all right for a minute, then it chokes up. And when it comes loose again, it throws a blob of paint that'd knock IQ out of the balcony.
Well, pound it on the porch steps, and maybe that'll loosen it up.
Okay, I will.
There, now try it.
Okay. Psst. Ah!
Oh, heavenly days, McGee, you almost hit me with that.
I'm sorry, kiddo, I didn't know it was loaded. Well, here we go. There, now, Dad ratted it, done it again. Clogged up.
Well, hurry up and get the job finished, McGee. It's colder than a lineman's lunch out here.
Well, you go on in the house if you want. I can handle this all right.
No, I've got to stay out here and tell people who you are.
Huh?
You get a little more of that white paint on you and they'll think you're a badly constructed snowman.
Okay. Ah,
that does it.
Now, I'll have this tree sprayed before you can
watch your aim, dearie.
Huh?
No, you better shut it off. Here comes Mrs. Carstairs.
No.
Hello there, Mrs. Carstairs. Won't you come in the house and have a slug of tea?
No, thank you, my dear. I am just out walking my Pekingese and must hurry along.
What Pekingese, Carsty? I don't see him.
Oh, it was too cold for him to come along, Mr. McGee. But as long as one of us goes out, he's satisfied.
Ah, it's really a sweet little dog, Millicent, from what I've seen of him.
Personally, I wouldn't have one of them four-legged dust mops as a gift. Give me a man-sized dog. I ever tell you about the hunting dog I had once, Carsty, by the name of Durante?
Durante?
Yeah, what a nose that dog had. Never forget one time we were walking through the woods. Me and my dog, pipe over my shoulder, gun in my mouth.
What was that again?
Gun over my shoulder and pipe in my mouth, when all of a sudden Durante freezes. He's on point, nose quivering, tail out like a ramrod, 1 foot in the air. I raises my gun, walks slowly forward, and there, not 10 feet away, was a guy sitting on a stump.
That was quite a dog, Mr. McGee. Trained to flush game wardens, was he?
No, sir. I bawled the dog out, and then I was never so ashamed in my life. It was the smartest thing he'd ever done.
Why?
Well, sir, I got talking to the guy, and you know what? His name was Partridge.
Oh. All right, that's the first portion of Fibber McGee and Molly from December 18th, 1945. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes. Hey, Dan, when I came here today and Lisa showed up here, we were talking about, you know, we're going to celebrate kind of Christmas, give each other a present tomorrow because she's heading off to Florida.
Yeah, she takes her annual sabbatical.
She's a snowbird. Good old snowbird here. So I haven't bought her a Christmas present yet, and she hasn't bought me a Christmas present yet. So she's like, so what do you want? I'm like, hey, wait a minute. There's something I want, and I had no idea what the price was.
You can only guess on this one, right,
now,
Dan?
Now, Dan, all I wanted was little earbuds, but they're good ones, little earbuds that I could listen to my music on.
But
stuff
they
like
weren't
that.
From Walgreens.
But they're like nice earbuds, and I had no idea. But I'm guessing $85, $100. You know, that's a lot, right, for earbuds?
Yeah, I mean, for a good pair, you can.
Yeah. For a good pair of earbuds.
You can get up in the hundreds, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm like, that's what I want. And she's like, okay, let me look them up. $495.
So I told
for
them
the earbuds.
Continue thinking of something other than
so
that.
So I guess I'm not getting those earbuds that
not
I
from
want.
Me, anyways. You can get them for yourself.
No.
Maybe Dan will get them for you.
Yeah, pitch in. Everybody here at WGN should pitch in. Just give me the...
Well, we're all going to
pitch
in a buck.
Which I'd probably lose the second day I'd have them, you know.
That's not a sound investment
no,
to make.
No, I know.
He's not a sound guy, so it makes sense.
Thanks a lot. All right, let's get back now to Fibber McGee and Molly.
Henry W. Partridge. Wasn't that wonderful, Carsty?
No, I don't think that's so remarkable, Mr. McGee. In the light of what a police dog of mine once did.
What was that, Millicent? After all, it's so cold out tonight, the bologna won't spoil.
Well, this dog of ours was extremely intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
One day I had him in the post office, and I noticed he was staring at the police posters on the wall. Suddenly he dashed out the door and was gone.
Probably went out to steal an apple off a fruit stand, Carsty.
No. When I got home, he was gripping our butler by the vest pocket and was barking into the telephone, which he'd knocked off the table. When the police arrived, it turned out that Jarvis was wanted by the authorities in 3 states.
Yes, but why was your dog holding him by the vest pocket, Millicent?
That was where our butler kept his fountain pen. You see, he was wanted for forgery. Well, so nice to have seen you. Good evening.
Who does she think she's kidding? I don't believe a word of that stuff. I'll bet she made that whole thing up.
Well, never mind her, dearie. Get busy with that paint before it freezes solid, will you?
Oh, gee, it might at that. Well, back to work. Ah, there she glows.
Stopped up again, McGee?
Yeah, the doggone thing. I only got about a third of this tree sprayed, too. Maybe if...
Hey.
What?
How could Carstairs' dog be gripping the butler by the vest and barking into the phone at the same time?
Why, she didn't say he was gripping the butler with his teeth, dearie.
Huh?
You know, after all, a dog as smart as that could hold him down with one hind paw, dial the police station with the other, and use his front feet to take fingerprints.
Yeah, maybe, but how she... Oh, well, why should I worry? Ah, that's better yet.
You're getting more paint on yourself than you are on the tree, McGee.
Well, the wind keeps changing. They ought to make these paint sprays with a weather vane on them. Why, George,
Oh, dear. In the time you've taken to get this tree a dirty gray, pet, I could have whitewashed the Kaibab National Forest with a flip gun.
Well, doggone it, I don't see...
Hello, folks. What's going on
Hello,
here?
Hello, Mr. Wilcox.
Hi, Junior. Pull up a front step and give yourself a three-point landing.
You want your Christmas tree painted white, Mr. Wilcox, trot home and get it.
Yeah, I won't be out here very long, Junie, as soon as I adjust the nozzle on this paint.
Hey, wait a minute, Mac. Do you mean to stand there like a front man for painter's colic and tell me you're actually going to ruin that pretty little tree with white paint? Ruining that refugee from the forest primeval? Despoiling a magnificent evergreen?
Ah, skip the dramatics, Junior. We know you memorized Evangeline in high school.
And you played the heavy in the Chautauqua Company of Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm, too, didn't you, Mr. Wilcox?
The juvenile lead, if you please. I also had three seasons of Shakespeare.
A likely story. When you play Shakespeare, son, that's when Othello needs a friend.
Oh. Everyone in Omaha, I'll have you know, said I was another Barrymore.
Hmm.
Why, when I came out in my tights and said, "Oh, what a rogue and peasant slave am I."
You can say that again.
Now, hush, McGee. I love Shakespeare. Go on, Mr. Wilcox.
Is it not monstrous that this player here, seeing a lady forced to menial task and seeing such drudgery, would not then dispense a thing called Johnson's glow coat? Forsooth, a goodly fluid, which spread upon the scullery linoleum would thus eliminate the scrub. No rub, no buff. Just pour it on, and in one-third the time it takes for our glass to turn, it dries.
If Shakespeare ain't in the public domain, this two-bit Orson Welles is going to be sued for $9 million.
Ah, yes, it dries, and so mirror-like it gleams that porridge spilled, wiped off, leaves not a single spot. The labor saved, the hours gained, the beauty seen, 'tis glow-coat. Beloved by Chatelaine and serving wench alike, your nearest dealer.
Now wait a minute, Mr. Wilcox. Is that in Hamlet?
My dear girl, it's in every hamlet, every village, every town, city, and metropolis. Every place where a housewife takes pride in the appearance of her kitchen. And if I don't get back to the office in the next 10 minutes, I'll find myself back in Chautauqua. So long, kid.
Was the biggest ham I've seen since Blue Boy went to the state fair. He better be careful or he'll wind up on a platter with an apple in his mouth. Ah, but this ain't getting my tree sprayed.
Well, hurry up. You almost got it done now.
Yeah. Let's see. I get it all loosened up good. Ah, there she goes. Ah, this is the best it's been yet.
Yes.
Look how white the tree is getting, Molly.
There's one question I'd like to ask you, McGee. Are you sure
Don't bother me now, kiddo. I'm doing too good. Hot dog. Ain't that getting beautiful? I finally got this spray gun working perfect.
I know, but look, McGee, I've been wanting to ask you if...
Later, Tootsie, later. I'm just about finished now. Just up there a little bit. Ah, oh, gee, I'm through. All done. And believe me, that's the whitest white Christmas tree you'll ever see. Now, won't you admit this is a mighty pretty effect, baby?
Yes, if you like that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll go and make some hot coffee, dearie.
Okay.
McGee?
Huh?
Whose Christmas tree is this on the front porch?
Oh, that's the one I bought this morning that I'm going to paint white. What? Oh, my gosh, what tree did I paint?
The one that's been growing there in the yard all these years. Bring in the vacuum cleaner when you come.
Of all that dead. If I ain't the dumbest bloke that ever drew breath. A wise guy. A know-it-all. Can't tell one tree from another, one that's growing and one that ain't. I'm a sap it. I'm a brainless, incompetent, ham-handed butterfingers. If I wasn't so stupid, I'd never let me sit here and insult myself like this. Dad Radford.
Oh, hi, mister. What's the matter?
I know that voice. Is that you, Teeny?
Sure it is, I betcha.
Hmm.
What you sitting there with your head in your hands for, mister? Got a headache? Want me to get you an aspirin, Want me to,
No, no, thanks, sis. Medicine won't touch the kind of headache I got. I just busted my ego in four places.
Gee, I'm sorry, mister.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Who did that?
Huh? Who did what?
Who painted that tree white?
Hmm?
Gee, is that ever beautiful?
Yeah, but that ain't the one.
And it's growing right there in your yard.
Yeah, you see, I got a little confused and
Oh, Mr. McGee, you're wonderful.
Huh? I am?
You're the nicest man in town, I bet you.
Hmm?
You put your Christmas tree right out in the front yard where everybody can share it with you, didn't you?
Well, I didn't exactly.
Gee, all the kids in the neighborhood are going to love you for this, mister. Why, I can hardly wait till you get it all lighted up.
You can't, eh?
Hmm?
I says you can't, eh?
Can't what?
You can't wait till I get it all lighted up.
Gee, neither can I. And you know what, mister?
What?
When it's growing in the ground like that, it can't wobble and fall over either. Mm-hmm. Our Christmas tree at home is always wobbly.
Yeah, lots of people make that mistake, sis. They don't stop to think if they were a tree and got all lit up and then came into a warm room, they'd wobble a little too. Skip it. So you think it looks all right out here in the front yard?
Oh, boy. I'll say.
Mm-hmm.
Now all the little children that haven't got Christmas trees can come and see yours, can't they?
Yeah, I kind of plan to get a lot of little bags of candy and stuff and let the kids help themselves Christmas Eve, sis. I just planned that. Think they'd like that?
Gee, will they ever? And us kids will sing.
Sing what?
You know, the song we sing for you every Christmas time. 'Twas the night before Christmas, the one we just recorded.
Oh.
Would you like to hear it now, mister? Would you,
Yes. Yes, I believe I would, sis.
Okay. Hey, Kenny, Johnny, Buddy, Ratty, come here. He wants to hear it, all right.
A wonderful bunch of kids going around the neighborhood with a 30-piece orchestra.
The night before Christmas and all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hope that Saint Nicholas soon would be there.
The children were nestled all warm in their wee little beds, while visions of sugar plums danced in their wee little heads. Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap had just settled down for a long
bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters, threw open the sash.
Then, what to my wondering eye should appear but a miniature sleigh and a tiny reindeer. With a little old driver so lively and quick that I knew right away that it must be Saint Nick. All bundled in fur from his head to his foot, old Santa was covered with ashes and soot. I drew in my head and was turning around when down the chimney he came with a bow.
His eyes, how they twinkled. His dimples, how merry. His cheeks were like roses. His nose like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow. The beard on his chin was as white as the snow.
The stump of a little old pipe he held tight in his teeth, and the smoke went around and around and around his head like a wreath. He was so chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf, that I laughed and I laughed and I laughed when I saw him in spite of myself. He had a broad face, and a little round belly, that shook when he laughed, like a ball full of jelly. He gave me a wink of his eye and a twist of his head, a chuckle and a smile I knew all the while I had nothing to dread. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work and filled all the stockings.
Oh, boy.
Then turned with a jerk. And laying a finger aside of his nose, and giving a nod up the chimney, he rose. He sprang to his sleigh, to his team, gave a whistle, and away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim, and he drove on the side. Christmas to all, and to all, good luck.
Oh, is he gone?
In the night after Christmas and all through the house, not a creature is stirring. Not even a mouse. The presents are scattered and broken, I fear. And St. Nicholas won't come again for a year. The children are nestled all warm in their wee little beds, of sugar plums dance in their wee little heads. Mama in her kerchief and I in my cap are settled at last for a
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
That's Fibber, McGee, and Molly from December 18th, 1945, painting the Christmas tree white, and Jim and Marion Jordan starring there, along with Harlow Wilcox doing the announcing. We had Shirley Mitchell, Arthur Q. Bryan, and Bea Benaderet in that cast, sponsored by Johnson's Wax, as heard on NBC. Let's take a quick break, then it's more of the WGN Radio Theater. All right, so we told our listeners we were going to reveal what our favorite toys were
all right,
growing up.
You go first.
Why? You go first.
Because
ladies
I asked
first.
You to.
All right, if
okay.
You're asking me first. My favorite toy growing up was an Evel Knievel doll. And it had the motorcycle, and then it was like this gizmo. You'd put it into the gizmo, and you'd wind it,
yeah.
And it would go, and it would usually wipe out and stuff. But it was, I loved Evel Knievel growing up. You know, he would do those jumps all over the place.
Sure.
I would watch every one of them on Wide World of Sports.
Remember when he was on Happy Days?
He was on Happy Days?
Wasn't he?
No.
Oh, it was
You're
just the
Evel
Knievel jump. It was in Fonzie.
It was Fonzie
did
jump the
Evel
shark.
Knievel jump. Yeah, never mind.
All right, so what was yours?
Okay, well, I had two, so I'll just say them really, really fast. One of them was the Atari Pong. I used to go downstairs with my dad after dinner every night, and we'd play
Boop.
Pong together, which seems so archaic
Boop.
Now, but we had spent a lot of hours, doing that. That was really neat, and I really loved my Radio Shack tape recorder.
Oh,
that was
man.
The be-all, end-all
That's
of
how you got
toys.
Here. You started with your tape recorder.
I mean, just interviewing
demos.
Anybody and everybody, right, on my little Panasonic. You know, you hit play
was
and
it
record.
Panasonic or realistic?
I don't know.
Was it from Radio Shack? If it was from Radio Shack, it was probably realistic.
I don't know.
Realistic.
It was just a little piece of junk something. And you know the cassette tapes they would pull and you had to get new tapes all the time we would try to, you know, twist them and twirl them and get the tape back into the cassette. It was a lot of fun.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thank you, Laura. All right. It is 1:07 in the morning. Thanks for staying up late with us, folks. This is hour three of the WGN Radio Theater, the vivacious Lisa Wolf next to me here. And you know what, Lisa?
What, Carl?
We've had some other great, some more great toys. I remember these toys. As I'm reading these texts, I'm remembering these great toys like Operation and
Spirograph and Easy Bake Oven.
Oh, that's the one.
That's a lot of fun.
I think, had an Easy Bake Oven.
My mom wouldn't buy one for me, but
no?
I always wanted that.
Yeah, you'd put
a brownie in there.
There was a light bulb.
I know, it's so silly.
Easy Bake Oven. Of course, Barbie dolls, that was a big one. And then Slinky, we had a few of those. A lot of trains. People have been texting in trains. What toy could you not live without? Text us 312-981-7200. Dan Long, he liked G.I. Joes. He had a G.I. Joe growing up, right, Dan?
Yeah, I think everybody did for about 40 years.
Yeah, I had one. I had one also. What else, Dan? Do you remember what other toys you had? Did you ever have a big wheel?
I did have a big wheel. I'm trying to think.
I did, too. I had a big wheel. Did you have a big wheelie?
I don't know. I remember my, a bike, like a Stingray-type bike.
Yeah.
You know, with the banana seat.
Right.
That was really cool.
And what else? Can you think of anything else, Dan?
What about Sit and Spin? Those are great.
Oh, Sit and Spin.
Sit and Spin?
Well, Dan wouldn't remember a sit and spin. Dan's 28.
Yeah, I know. So. But we literally still have our sit and spin. You
really?
Sit on it. It's a circle, and there's a circle handle on it. And you spin around just by moving the handle. I mean, the handle's stationary. You just turn. I can't explain it. It was yellow and had red stripes.
Well, sometimes when you have a hangover and you sit down and you spin on the commode is like a sit and spin, right? I don't have my
I wouldn't know about that.
What do you call it? I don't have my...
You're the Roma wine drinker.
Yeah. Roma wines.
Hot Wheels is another one.
Yeah. All right. So text us 312-981-7200. In this hour, it is the Cavalcade of America, hosted by Walter Houston. It's all brought to you by Cats Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming film Gringo about an American businessman whose life is thrown into turmoil by an incident in Mexico.
What do they win?
They're going to win a Twilight Zone. It's a 4-CD set.
All right. The number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actress played Furiosa in Mad Max Fury Road.
Get back in the hole. Keep the hatch open.
All right, who is that great actress? 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after these words.
All right, we're back. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
Get back in the hole. Keep the hatch open.
And Dan took a call off the air, and we found out that Joe knew the right answer, which is Charlize Theron. And
Charlize Theron.
Theron. Theron, throne?
Theron.
Like a throne? No, I don't know.
Charlize Theron. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, she's the winner. She's not the winner. She's the actress. Joe's the winner, and Joe has won a Twilight Zone 4 CD set.
Yes, he did.
It's getting late.
Lisa's getting a little giggly.
Joe has won. It is a great 4 CD set.
She's getting slap happy.
And it is hosted by Stacey Keach, and Joe is going to love it. So thank you for calling in.
Okay, you ready for Cavalcade of America?
I sure am.
All right, it was an anthology series. Came to radio in 1935, lasted all the way to 1953, and the whole time it was sponsored by DuPont. It was the one sponsor for the entire time. These were documented historical events using stories of individual courage, initiative, and achievement with triumphs against the odds, often through technological innovation. And the stories are written by people like Arthur Miller and Stuart Hawkins, Robert Tallman, many others. And the stars were the best in Hollywood. Orson Welles, Ray Collins, Cary Grant, John McIntyre, Agnes Moorehead, Ronald Reagan, Mickey Rooney, many, many others. And then it was on the air and TV from 1952 through 1957. We have a great Christmas episode for you now from December 25th, 1944. This is called America for Christmas. It's hosted by Walter Houston, part one of the Cavalcade of America.
Presenting Walter Houston in America for Christmas on the Cavalcade of America, sponsored by the DuPont Company, maker of better things for better living through chemistry.
Good evening, this is Walter Houston. Tonight on a small island in the lonely distances of the Pacific, an island you never knew before existed and will find with difficulty on the map, a troop of soldiers, handful of Navy men, few Marines, one or two flyers, and a medical staff are celebrating Christmas. I said celebrating, but perhaps there is a better word for it. Perhaps I should have said reminiscing about their former Christmas celebrations, which took place in the dim and distant past, in different settings and under different circumstances. It is with such servicemen and women as these in mind that tonight we bring you this special Christmas play. And so, with the best wishes of the season, the DuPont Company presents America for Christmas by Peter Lyon, in which I have the pleasure of appearing in the part of a master of ceremonies for an overseas USO camp show entertainment unit. And we're happy to have as our soloist an authority on American folk music, the composer of Ballad for Americans, Earl Robinson.
We are now on our small island in the Pacific. Its name will remain undisclosed for reasons of military security. But you can be sure that every inch of its ground is by now familiar to every man stationed there. By now, they've eaten their Christmas dinner and opened their Christmas packages. But there's one remaining package addressed to all the men still to be opened. A package of good cheer and glad tidings to the men in their home away from home.
He who now will bless the poor shall yourselves find blessing.
The group has just finished a Christmas carol, and the MC, an old vaudeville trooper, steps forward to open the show.
Very good, very good. I'd like to sign you all up to join our troupe. Which one of you guys was singing tenor?
Me.
Well, we'll sign everybody but you. Well, what about it, fellas? Has it been a good Christmas?
Why, sure.
It's been okay.
You don't sound very sure.
Ah, who are you guys kidding? Not even yourselves. Two Christmases ago, I was in Oregon standing 2 feet deep in snow. Look at these palm trees. Is this Christmas?
Yeah, that's what I thought. That's what all of us in this troupe figured. Me and Marilyn here and June and the quartet there and Sandy over there with the guitar. We had a dope lot, right? Right, Marilyn?
Right.
Right. Well, we thought everybody's been giving everybody else some Christmas presents, right?
Right.
All except we haven't given you any. No show tonight. That is, no regular show. And we've got a special one, right?
Right.
Right. We have caused to be constructed a show, something brand new, bright and different. Songs and stories from our travels all over the country we love. And it's our present to you. It's the best we can do. It's all we can do. Okay?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Places, everybody. The stage, that's over there. No curtain, but you can imagine it now rising. Orchestra finishing the overture, lights dimming. Here it is, America for Christmas.
Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Roll on, Columbia, roll on. Your power is turning our darkness to dawn. So roll on, Columbia, roll on. Roll on,
Columbia? Who's that? What are they singing about?
They're singing about America, young lady, and Columbia is her symbol. She's a big country and a great country, a hot and cold country. An empty one and crowded. She's an all-over country. And whatever you want, you'll find her in America. That's why they're singing about her.
They? Who are they?
They're the people, young lady. The people who live in America and sing songs about her and tell stories about her and lie about her and brag about her and love her. The farmers on her plains and the men who built her cities and made her strong. Roll on, Columbia.
Roll on, Columbia.
They're all over America right now, singing and talking and telling tall tales. If you want to meet them, you'll have to travel the whole country, fast.
Let's go.
All right, and discover America all over again.
Where do we start?
Well, let's see. Might as well start where the pilgrim started, I guess. On the shores of New England.
Old Stormy was a fine old man. Do me way, old Storm along. Old Stormy was a fine old man.
Way, hey, hey, Mr. Storm along.
I wish I was old Stormy's son.
Do me way, old Storm along.
I'd build me a ship of 1,000 ton.
Way, hey, hey, Mr. Storm along.
I'd fill her up with New England rum.
Fill me way, old Storm along.
And all my shellbacks,
they would each have some. Way, hey, hey, Mr. Storm along.
Old Stormy's dead. And
that's New England. Song of the men who go down to the sea in ships. Down to the sea from craggy inlets and deep sea ports. There's rocks all over New England.
All over?
All over. Even the fields and meadows of the New England farms. Makes it tough to make a living. There was a farmer in New England who invited his minister to pay his farm a visit. The two of them, the farmer and the minister, walked over the stony fields, the minister saying...
Why was it you wanted me to come out on your farm?
Reverend, I want you to pray to God with me that I'd get better crops.
What this land needs is not prayer, but fertilizer.
That's New England, a rocky country. Men get to be shrewd traders in that country. They have to.
What's a shrewd trader?
A shrewd trader is, do you want to watch a couple of shrewd traders in operation? A Yankee peddler with a wagon load of Yankee notions pulled up in front of a Yankee general store. The storekeeper going down into the road and asking...
What's the price of your razor strops?
$1 each for these strops.
$1 apiece? They'll be sold for half the month before the year's out.
One of these strops is sold for 50 cents within a year. I'll make you a present of one, mister.
You will you?
Now,
Ben. Oh, you Ben?
Yep.
You're the witness to the contract.
Yeah, I'm the witness.
All right, peddler. I'll purchase the strop on those conditions. Here's your dollar.
Contract's a contract. I'll stick to it.
Ben, I don't much like this strop now that I bought it. How much you give me for it?
Hey.
Well, guess seeing it's you, I'll give you 50 cents for it.
Hey, now, see here.
Here you are, Ben. 50 cents, it's yours.
All right, you win. Here's your strop for free.
Want to watch out for yourself when you're in Bethel, Mr. Peddler. Some pretty sharp fellows around here.
Tolerable. Nothing to brag about. I made 75 cents on that deal.
How's that?
I got $1 for 2 strops, which cost me only 12 and a half cents apiece. I heard of the cute tricks of you Bethel fellas. I generally sell these strops for only 25 cents apiece. But, gentlemen, if you want any more at 50 cents apiece, I'll be happy to supply your whole village. Yes, sir. Anything else you want to buy now?
Nope. Been shaved enough by you tin peddlers. Want no more of you.
It's very hard to condemn a whole class because of one or two dishonest ones. Give me a fair trial. I'm traveling all through this countryside. I can get rid of your unsaleable goods.
Nope.
Here, tell you what I'll do. I'll give you a fair chance. I'll sell you anything I have in my wagon at my lowest wholesale price, and we'll take in exchange anything you please to pay me from your store at the retail price.
Mm-hmm.
Fair, ain't it?
I'll look over your goods. Got a lot of whetstones there. Not how much?
Wholesale price of whetstones is $3 a dozen.
I'll take 12 dozen of them.
All right. That's $36 you owe me, for which I'm to take such goods as you please at retail price. Now, what are you going to pay me in?
In whetstones, retail price 50 cents, you get just 6 dozen.
There's a couple of shrewd traders.
Let's move on. Let's get away from the rocky country.
You think that's a bad country? Why, meet the fella from Maryland.
The dogs in Maryland are so poor that they have to lean against the fence to bark. It takes 3 or 4 pigs all at once to pull up a blade of grass. And if they want to cast a shadow, it takes 6 pigs to do that.
Should we go further west? If the country in the east is also bad...
West of that country, you run into West Virginia. Now, there's some country. Hill country. You want to hear a West Virginian on the subject?
All hills and valleys in West Virginia. Valleys real narrow. So narrow the dogs have to wag their tails up and down. Can't wag them back and forth. Why, there's one valley in West Virginia so narrow that the moonshine has to be wheeled out on a wheelbarrow every morning and the daylight wheeled in.
Well, come along, little girl. Got a lot of traveling to do.
I heard that railroad whistle blow, blow, blow. Yes, I thought I heard that railroad whistle blow. And I thought I heard that lonesome whistle blow, woo, woo. And it blowed like it never blowed before.
Taking this train, jump on.
Where's it go? West?
West, west, and it goes right by Pittsburgh. Have to look fast if you want to see it.
Where is it? I want to see Pittsburgh.
There's a Pittsburgh fella.
I've been working that Pittsburgh steel, I thought you knowed. I've been dumping that red hot slag way down the road. I've been a blasting, I've been firing, I've been pouring that red hot iron. I've been having some hard traveling, Lord. If you want to get iron, you go in the hole. You want to get zinc, you go in the hole. You want to get lead, you go in the hole. You want to get coal, you go in the hole. You want to get oil right out of the ground. You dig a little hole about 10 miles down, and that's what you get by going in the hole.
Still going west, same road that Daniel Boone and Davy Crockett took. Only we can go a little faster, riding on the Wabash Cannonball.
She glides along the woodland, the lakes, and by the shore. Hear that mighty Russian engine. Hear that lonesome hobo's call.
Riding through the country on the Wabash Cannonball.
That's right. Just like our grandfathers did elbow room. That's what they wanted. They didn't want a neighbor any nearer than 10 miles. Besides, it's greener on the other side.
The other side of what?
The Mississippi River, the granddaddy of them all.
MISSISSIPPI.
That's right. The rivermen, the boatmen floating down on rafts, talking easy on the night air, talking big, talking quiet, making up stories just to hear the sound of their tongues wagging. Like these two men talking about their river, the big old Mississippi. Listen to them.
Yep, this nice old muddy Mississippi River water is wholesomer to drink than the clear water of the Ohio. Let a pint of this yaller Mississippi water settle, you'll have about a half to 3/4 of an inch of mud in the bottom. What you want to do is keep it stirred up.
Yep, that's right. Now, there's nutrition in this good old mud. You look at the graveyards, that tells the tale. Why, trees won't grow worse shucks in the Cincinnati graveyard. But now in the St. Louis graveyard, why, the trees grew upward of 800 feet high. And it's all on account of the water the people drunk before they laid up. A Cincinnati corpse don't richen the soil any.
All All right, that's the first portion of Cavalcade of America from Christmas of 1944 with America for Christmas with host Walter Houston. We'll get back to it in just a few minutes here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, welcome back. Thanks, Laura. This is the WGN Radio Theater, and we're tuning in to classic radio as we do every Saturday and Sunday night right here on the greatest radio station on earth, Radio 720 WGN. We do it right out of the Showcase Studio. So when you walk by 435 North Michigan Avenue, make sure you wave to us. And there's still people out there.
I
it's 1:35 in the morning. Still people walking by and waving to us.
Well, right? They're waving to me. I'm
yeah,
pretty
well,
sure.
Of course. Of course. And it's freezing in the studio, by the way. I have my full winter jacket on.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Dan's fault, though.
Yeah.
He likes it
Dan
cold.
Likes it cold, I guess.
He's a refrigerator type.
Yeah. I'm amazed that every single, it's been 2 years and you guys are still cold.
We're cold. We're always
like you were every single night
yet.
2 years
I know.
Ago.
I know.
Like, can you call the
nothing,
boiler room?
Nothing changes.
It's so cold in this studio.
And we have three
Do
new
other
radio
people...
shows coming up tonight, I was going to mention, but
oh,
you
go
can
ahead.
Still talk
no, go
about
ahead.
The cold.
No, go right ahead.
I'll say we had three shows today. We have three more shows tonight. We've got The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet. We have Kraft Music Hall and The Life of Riley, which
yeah.
is what you are living right now.
When we come back here at 11 p.m., that's what we're going to play for you.
Tonight.
Yeah, three more classic radio shows. But right now it's time for the conclusion to the Cavalcade of America.
That wasn't all they talked about either. They talked about, oh, mosquitoes, for instance. Mosquitoes in the Mississippi River Valley. I heard a man talking about those mosquitoes once.
Well, sir, I'll tell you. Now, the state of Arkansas has been injured and kept back by generations of exaggerations concerning the mosquitoes there. Why, sir, these mosquitoes have been persistently represented as being formidable and lawless. But the truth is, they are feeble, insignificant in size, diffident to a fault, sensitive. Now, if you really want to hear about some formidable mosquitoes, sir, why, then there are the Lake Providence colossi.
Lake Providence? There are large mosquitoes there?
Two of them can whip a dog. Four of them can hold a man down.
I must say that that's...
Why, sir, this may strain your credulity, but I even seen those mosquitoes at Lake Providence trying to vote.
What?
Well, I have seen them canvassing around the polls.
Excuse me, gentlemen. I overheard what you were saying about mosquitoes, and I was about to add simply that the biggest mosquitoes I've ever seen was a little further to the west, in Oklahoma. Years ago, gentlemen, I saw four mosquitoes kill a buffalo. Kill a buffalo, yes, sir. And pick his bones clean and leave him to bleach in the sun. Good day, sir.
What do you know?
What's the matter? His story seem a little sizable?
I can't stand a liar, sir. I just can't stand a liar.
You're listening to America for Christmas, starring Walter Houston as the Master of Ceremonies in a traveling USO Camp Shows unit on the Cavalcade of America, sponsored by the DuPont Company. Maker of better things for better living through chemistry. In our play tonight, Walter Houston portrays an old vaudevillian who is leading his USO troop through the Southwest Pacific. And on this Christmas night, they are entertaining a company of servicemen and women on a tiny Pacific island, entertaining them by giving them the best Christmas present they know, a memory of America as they remember her through our American folklore. They've covered the eastern half of the country in their special Christmas show. They're in the Valley of the Mississippi right now, and I think... Yes, they're in the station, buying their tickets to the next stop.
Oh, that Rock Island Line is a mighty good road. Yes, that Rock Island Line is a road to ride. And if you want to ride, you got to ride it like you find it. Get your ticket at the station on the Rock Island Line.
And so now we're across the Mississippi. This must be our Kansas.
Please. Maryland.
What's the matter?
The name of this state is not Arkansas, my poor benighted child.
It isn't? That's what it looks like when you see it. Arkansas.
Oh, no. Now, maybe you don't realize how strongly folks in this state feel on the subject. Years ago, there was a debate right in the state legislature when someone proposed that the state go on record to change its name from Arkansas to Arkansas. Another fella, well, he got up and made a big speech.
Mr. Speaker, you blue-bellied rascal.
I have for the last 30 minutes been trying to get your attention. And each time I've caught your eye, you have wormed, twisted, and squirmed like a dog with a flea in his eye. Gentlemen, you may tear down the honored pictures from the halls of the United States Senate. Pull down the stars and stripes. Curse the goddess of liberty. But your crime would in no wise compare in enormity with what you propose to do when you would change the name of Arkansas. Compare the lily of the valley to the gorgeous sunrise. The discordant croak of the bullfrog to the melodious tunes of the nightingale. The bray of a Mexican mule to the classic strains of Mozart. But never change the name of Arkansas! No! 1,000 times no!
They didn't change the name of Arkansas, did they?
No, they left it alone.
And is Arkansas related to Kansas?
No relation at all, little girl. Not even first cousins, for they miss touching each other at their border by 40 miles. In fact, down in Arkansas, people sing a song about the people up north in Kansas.
Oh, they charter back a thin in Kansas. Oh, they charter back a thin in Kansas. Oh, they charter back a thin and it rolls right down their chin. And they lap it up again in Kansas. Oh, potatoes, they grow small in Kansas. Potatoes, they grow small in Kansas. Oh, potatoes, they grow small and they dig them in the fall. And they eat them tops and all in Kansas. Come all who want to roam.
I don't think I want to stay in Kansas, if that's what it's like.
Well, it's not exactly like that, but the potatoes really aren't quite as big as they are in, say, Idaho.
They grow big potatoes in Idaho?
Big potatoes in Idaho? Well, I should think pretty sizable. A couple of years ago, when they built an army camp in Idaho, one of the mess sergeants went around to see about buying some potatoes. Spoke to one of the Idaho farmers who had a little farm.
Raise potatoes on your land?
Mm-hmm.
Will you sell me some? I need some for the army camp, other side of Lewiston.
Well, how much do you want?
Oh, 100 pounds.
Only 100 pounds?
Yeah.
Nope. I wouldn't cut a spud in two for no one.
Still going west. Are we out of Arkansas yet?
Ah, yes. This is Texas. We'll be here quite a spot.
I should think so. It's so big.
Yeah, and the people here, well, they... I think quite a bit about their climate here, too. Weather, you know, comes different pretty often.
Well, seeing there's so much of Texas, I should think the weather would be all different kinds.
Yes, but the point is, in Texas, the weather is all kinds all at the same time. As the fella says, nobody prophesies about Texas weather except newcomers and dumb fools. Came the time when a fresh young tenderfoot walked into a Texas saloon, walked up to the bar and ordered a drink. Men in the place, they said nothing, just watched him. You know, a young fella finished his drink, then he hauls off and says...
Well, I believe it's going to rain.
My friend, did you know that there were only two kinds of people who prophesy about Texas weather?
Two kinds of people who prophesy on Texas weather? Well, that's very queer. Who are they?
Newcomers and dumb fools.
You say there are only two kinds of people who prophesy about Texas weather. Newcomers and dumb fools. Well, you're absolutely right. For after all, those are the only two kinds of people there are in Texas.
Cow country through here, and to the north, and to the west. Further on west, you come to the desert, where it's dry. Yuma, where it's been known to get pretty warm sometimes when it's summer. And the migratory workers sing in the evening.
I work in your orchard of peaches and prunes, and I sleep on the ground neath the light of your moon. On the edge of your city, you see us now and then. We come with the dust and we go with the wind. California, Arizona, I make all your crops. Then it's up north to Oregon to gather in your hops. Dig beets from your ground, cut the grapes from your vine, to get on your table your light sparkling wine.
Jump on, here we go again, north this time.
Another train ride?
I'm riding on this new river train. I'm riding on this new river train. Same old train that brought me here, and it's soon gonna carry me away.
Got something special for you to see up north here.
What's that, something big?
Biggest thing man has ever done.
Well, this world has seven wonders that the travelers always tell. Some gardens and some flowers, I guess you know them well. But now the biggest wonder in Uncle Sam's fair land, it's the King Columbia River and the Big Grand Coulee Dam. Up in the state of Washington,
she winds down her granite canyon, she bends across the lee, like a silver running stallion down her seaway to the sea.
Well, she ripped our boat to splinters, but she gave us dreams to dream of the day this coulee dam would cross that wild and wasted stream.
Now as we join in battle to make all people free,
that old coulee dam is fighting along with you and me.
Yonder flies a flying fortress to fight for Uncle Sam.
Spawned upon the Columbia River by the Big Grand Coulee Dam.
California. Are we going to California now?
Climate. That's all there is in California. The Californian says...
We got the healthiest. It's a healthy. When we started a graveyard, we had to shoot a man.
Hearing which... If you raise your eyebrows in polite disbelief, the Californian says further...
We don't have to prove it. We admit it.
Well, that's about it. Time to be getting back home now.
What? Oh, but we haven't seen nearly everything.
For every part of the country, a song or a story. Not time in half an hour to do them all justice. So, boys, I guess it's the end of the show.
It was enough, mister.
And if you're still wondering, I'll tell you... It's been an okay Christmas.
That's been the best Christmas I ever had. For the last 20 minutes, I've been standing in 2 feet of snow back in Oregon.
Okay, and we'll have one last song. Everybody sing. For every part of the country, a song or a story. But all the parts, all the states add up to one mighty whole. One America. Roll on, Columbia. Roll on.
Oh, roll.
Walter Houston and the members of tonight's Cavalcade cast, our thanks.
On this Christmas night, we are thinking the same thoughts you are of men far from home, in deep snow and in tropical heat, fighting the battle of freedom. What is in your hearts, our hearts, and their hearts has been said powerfully and beautifully by a soldier, a GI. Let me read it to you. At the moment, it is difficult to think of victory as meaning anything but an end of fear, to loneliness and death, and a chance to go back to pick up the strands of interrupted life. Henceforth, each simple pleasure, each right we always took so lightly, will take on rich meaning. We know what it costs to keep them, and we know, too, that we have really earned a share in them. But victory means much more. With victory, we stand on the threshold of limitless inventions and comforts. We possess the resources to extend our horizons in every field of endeavor and every aspect of human relations. However, ancient and stubborn enemies are still to be conquered. Enemies which must be overcome, not by armies, but by minds and hearts and talents set wholly free. Such enemies are poverty, insecurity, prejudice, disunity. These too shall be conquered, for we have begun to think more deeply and more dynamically. And if we can sweep aside untold obstacles to smash the most ruthlessly efficient machines of destruction ever devised, surely we possess the vision and practical genius to organize for peace, security, and a world designed for living. Till now,
Many have ruled because of accident of birth and power or wealth. But throughout the world, the unfit, the weaklings, and the traitors are falling by the wayside. New leaders are rising from the people, those who never sold their heritage of courage, faith, and simple human dignity. With victory, we shall have destroyed those who would have enslaved the world. Our sacrifices have been great, but we have won the opportunity to emerge from the animal kingdom and enter the kingdom of man. I look forward to living in such a world. I look forward to living in such a world. If a soldier risking his life at the front can say that, then certainly all of us can look forward. To all of you, the DuPont Company wishes a Merry Christmas. To the 34,000 DuPont men and women in the armed forces, we call Merry Christmas across the oceans. We send more than a greeting. We send our solemn pledge, we of DuPont, that we will not slow our efforts for 1 minute, that we will work and produce without let-up until the last gun is fired and the white flag over Berlin and Tokyo at last gives us a chance to rest and say, now it's really over. That is the pledge and promise of the men and women who work for DuPont. This is Walter Houston. Good night and God bless us all.
Tonight's Cavalcade play was based on A.L. Botkin's book, A Treasury of American Folklore, published by Crown Publishers. For use of special songs, Cavalcade is indebted to Woody Guthrie, and for their arrangement and direction to Earl Robinson. Heard in the program was the Sportsman's Quartet. The orchestra was conducted by Robert Armbruster. This is Gayne Whitman sending you season's greetings on behalf of Cavalcade sponsor, E.I. DuPont de Nemours Company of Wilmington, Delaware.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
That is the Cavalcade of America from Christmas of 1944. America for Christmas, sponsored by DuPont and hosted by Walter Houston. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. We have Jeff Carlins with us. And Lisa has a joke, right?
Okay, so here's what I found.
It's a Christmas joke.
Well, actually, what I found was holiday quotes from famous comedians.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to give you a couple of them, and it gives you a little insight into their personality. The first one is Phyllis Diller, and she says, "What I don't like about office Christmas parties is looking for a job the next day." Can't you just see her saying that, though? Johnny Carson.
And then she'd go, ah.
Yeah, she's just, it's her way. Johnny Carson said, "Mail your packages early so the post office can lose them in time for Christmas."
Right.
And the third one I'll do, and final one, is Joan Rivers.
Yeah.
And she said, "The one thing women don't want to find in their stockings on Christmas morning is their husband."
That sounds about right.
You definitely don't want to find that.
Not at all.
So when we come back here tonight, Lisa, at 11, we have
The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet. We have Kraft Music Hall and The Life of Riley.
All right. Well, Jeff is here. Jeff, what's on the show tonight?
Well, myself.
Or this morning, I should
say. Yes. Myself and Brian Altimer filling in for great Dave Plyer.
That's right.
For those who aren't aware, myself and Brian produced for
Brian.
The Great Row. Brian just stepped in. He's coming in.
Yeah.
It should be a good show. We're going to try to stay awake. We're normally on the opposite side of the clock for this one, 3 to 7. So we're here. We've got Mike Hooley Houlihan coming in. May know him from going east on Ashland back in the day.
Yeah.
He's got a new book out. He did some communications work for Chewy Garcia during the runoff. It's pretty interesting. He was in charge of glad-handing and taking Chewy into the Irish wards.
Very cool.
So should be fun. He's got some good stories to tell. We've also got a friend of actually Brian's, Jay Washington, coming in. And he's we're coming on the phone, actually. He was actually in Chirac. He played ahead of a role in Chirac.
Oh, right. He's
a Chicago guy.
Sure, sure.
Born and raised. Really
What's
interesting
his name?
Stories. Jay Washington.
Okay.
He's a comedian, does a podcast. He's got a good online persona.
So he's an actor.
Actor, comedian, jack of all trades.
Sure.
It should be good.
Yeah, we know how that works.
We asked a question earlier, so I'm going to ask you the question.
Sure.
What toy growing up could you live without?
You had to have it.
Could you not live without? Sorry.
What can you
live
without?
Light Bright. I love the Light Bright.
That's a good one. Yeah.
We all, did you have Light Bright, Carl?
I had. I think I had. I think my sisters had a Light Bright.
I seriously think we still have
it. You know what my sisters had? And they don't make them anymore. And you wouldn't remember this. This is before your time. Pickup sticks. Do you ever hear that?
Oh, yeah, of course. Pickup sticks.
They
still sell pickup sticks. These things were sharp on both ends.
Yeah, they don't make them sharp anymore.
Right, like cocktail skewers.
Yeah, I mean, here they were giving these to kids. These with these long sticks with super sharp points on both ends.
Oh, yeah.
Well, think
that's
about
really
Light Bright.
That's a really smart gift to give
that's
kids.
That's a really a major choking hazard right there. Those are little tiny colored pieces. They look like little jujubes.
You're like, hey, let me eat one of those.
I mean, and they're pretty colors. I don't know.